You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith and Rob Rang, hosts of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. Happy Thursday to all of our listeners. Plenty to tackle today as we gear up for Sunday's game between the Seahawks and Buccaneers. We'll be opening the show discussing the waiver wire, the only way teams are going to improve after the deadline, unless, of course, you have a good player that you can activate from injured reserve. In the second quarter, the Seahawks and Buccaneers have played in a few wild games recently. We'll revisit the chaos from 2013 and 2016, and we'll tie up the show looking at what's new with the Bucs. It's not just the angry, bald-headed coach on the sideline that Seahawks fans love to loathe. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. The trade deadline officially passed on Tuesday, but that doesn't mean good players won't be available from here on out. The problem, you can't just outright sign players anymore. Even vested veterans are now subject to waivers, which means you need a little luck to get a player, or you just need to be really bad.
That's true. There's going to be a lot of players that I think that are going to be added by some of those really bad football teams. But I think that the Seahawks have basically made their big moves so far, and it's going to be interesting to see if guys like Ed Dixon and the safety, Quandre Diggs, I mean, to see when they are able to make their debuts for the Seahawks so far this year.
Looking at the most interesting waiver wire moves so far, there will be some others, I'm sure, but maybe not as big of a name. The Patriots are planning to release Josh Gordon from injured reserve. In fact, it was reported today that they had done that, but it was not on the league transaction wire today. So here's what that means. He's not going to be claimed until Monday at the earliest. That's when a team will be able to claim him. Starting tomorrow, there's a rule in place that teams can't make waiver claims several days in front of game day. So they'll have to wait till Monday until somebody can claim him. Now the big question is, would the Seahawks have interest, and should they? This is a player that has a ton of talent, but as you and I both know, Rob, he's had a lot of issues avoiding his demons over the years.
He has. And I think on the one hand, sure. I think any time that you have a player as talented as Josh Gordon, it makes a lot of sense. At the same time, I really like Seattle's receiving core. I like the improvements that we've seen from David Moore, Malik Turner specifically, obviously DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. So, no, I don't think that the Seahawks should have interest in Gordon at this point, just because of the fact that they already have a young nucleus of talent at that position that knows the team, knows the routes and in the offense. And so I think that the Seahawks, like most playoff caliber teams, are not even going to have an option of taking Gordon, because he's going to be long off the market before a team like Seattle is going to even be in position. But even if he was, I think that what would you be doing at that point? You essentially would be casting away one of the young receivers that you already kind of built your success so far this season on. And so I think that's counterproductive at this point in the year.
If you're looking at this from a Madden standpoint, then you absolutely are going to replace Jerron Brown with Josh Gordon because he's the more talented player, but you have to add the human element here. And I'm not saying Josh Gordon is a bad guy, because from everything that I've been told, he's a good teammate. It doesn't come down to his character as far as being able to work with teammates and coaches and whatnot, but it's the issues that he has had with substance abuse. And he's just, like I said, he's constantly been battling these demons. And I just find it weird. I don't think the New England Patriots would just cut him like this, put him on injured reserve, and then waive him a few weeks later just because they were thinking it wasn't working on the field. To me, there's got to be something else going on there. And they did give him a second chance. Remember, he ended up leaving the team, and there were reports that he was going to have another suspension potentially the end of last year. Got reinstated before the start of the 2019 season. The Patriots brought him back into the fold. So even New England gave him a second chance. And yet, I just have a feeling something else is going on there. I hope that's not the case for his sake. I really hope that he's able to overcome his history of addictions and he can continue his career. But I've been arguing this for a while. When you have a player that has had this many issues, at some point you've got to be wondering, does football even need to be a top priority for this guy? And again, I don't know if he's having those issues again, but it seems to me like he's a player that's going to be battling those demons throughout the rest of his life, unfortunately. So considering that, I think he's a better player than Jerron Brown. Absolutely. When he's got his head on straight, he is a much better player. And you could make sense putting him with DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and David Moore. But From a chemistry standpoint, I agree with you, and I also just think it's too big of a risk to take on. That being said, I love that you mentioned he's not going to get there. I don't see any way the 27 teams that are in front of the Seahawks on the pecking order in the waiver wire, I don't see any way those 27 teams, even with his history, I don't see any way that at least one of those teams is not going to put a claim on him. And I'm even looking at some of the playoff teams that could add some help at receiver. The Baltimore Ravens could absolutely use Josh Gordon. The Philadelphia Eagles, the Carolina Panthers could use him. There's a number of teams in front of the Seahawks that I would be surprised if they don't take a chance on him. Talent always gets multiple opportunities. He hasn't been able to take advantage of all those chances up to this point, but he's still only 28 years old. So I just get a feeling one of those teams is going to take a shot on him. So even if the Seahawks do put a claim in, I'd be stunned if they actually are awarded him. If they are, that would kind of tell you what the rest of the league thinks, given Gordon's history.
No, it really does. And that's been one of the things, and unfortunately, with players who have struggled with addiction, is that once they have a little bit of time away from the team, where they are rehabbing an injury or they have been suspended, that's where you worry about them that much more. When they're inside of your building, then it's a lot easier to help those players remain focused. And so, again, like you were saying before, Corbin, about we don't know that there's been anything else going on with Josh Gordon, but you suspect that there might. And that's, I think, is just too much of a concern at this point, because, frankly, I don't see wide receiver as being a position of concern for Seattle. When you have MVP caliber quarterback like the Seahawks do in Russell Wilson, he's been able to turn good receivers into very good receivers. That's been one of the things that kind of characterizes the elite quarterbacks in this league. And Josh Gordon is a talent. And so I think that you did a great job of articulating the way you did in terms of if this was Madden, sure. But this is real NFL football, and it's all about the team winning more games. And I don't know that Josh Gordon helps the Seahawks win any more games.
You want to claim somebody that's reliable. And unfortunately, Josh Gordon has been anything but reliable since that 2013 season when he had over 1,600 receiving yards to lead the league. We've seen very small flashes of that ability sandwiched around a bunch of suspensions and time away from the team. I just don't think it's worthwhile. And there will be plenty of people, several of our listeners are saying, why not take a flyer? At ATC Poker said just that. We're fifth to last to pick. If we put in a claim, doesn't the priority reset next week anyway? Why not take a flyer on him? It's a good point. I mean, I guess you can make that argument. You know, why not take a shot? You're probably not going to get him anyway. But that's the general consensus for most of the people that are commenting here, is that they would love to have him. Most people are on board with claiming him, but they're realistic. The chances of it actually happening are nil to none. He's not going to be in a Seahawks uniform regardless, but still a fun discussion to look at. Certainly a talented player. And again, I hope that he's able to overcome those demons. It's been a problem for him throughout his NFL career, and he's an incredibly talented player. And again, from everything I've heard, is a good individual, a good guy. He's just unfortunately not been able to get over this addiction issue. And I just don't know at this point, with all the opportunity he's had, if he's going to be able to turn that corner. If you can't get it done in New England, then I'm really skeptical about you being able to get it done with another football team. Not saying New England's perfect, but generally they've done a decent job with bringing in trouble players and making it work. And if it doesn't, they move on quickly. And that's what they did here with Josh Gordon. There will be other players that hit the waiver wire over the next few weeks. And obviously the Seahawks, there may be some guys that are interested in, but with them winning games, it's going to be a lot tougher to get their hands on those players. That's why making moves before the deadline is typically the way they go. You can get your guys that you want, and the Seahawks were proactive a few weeks before the deadline to get Quandre Diggs. They've got Dixon coming back, so they feel they're comfortable with their 53-man roster as it is. Peloton is offering a limited-time offer. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use promo code LOCKED to get started. Coming up after the break, Seattle and Tampa Bay have played a few games that likely forced 12s all over the place to start taking blood pressure medication. We'll gladly revisit those games here in a few minutes. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. If you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or keep walking? Of course you take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? That's why I go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it. Where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. I wouldn't be telling you guys to bet with them if they weren't the best. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet this football season, bet with MyBookie. Did you know you could bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just take the other side. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings, and no matter what you bet or how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Welcome back, 12s. I'm Corbin Smith, along with Rob Rang. Glad to have you listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. Coming up later in the show, we're going to look at what's new with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They've had a ton of changes, a new coaching staff, and a bunch of personnel changes on both sides of the ball. A lot of really good young players in Tampa Bay coming in with this 2019 draft class as well. But first, as I mentioned just a few moments ago, the Seahawks and Buccaneers, they haven't played a lot of games against each other in recent history. Looking back at their entire series history, they came into the league at the same time, 1976, as expansion franchises. Seattle dominated this series early, and if you've looked back in history, Tampa Bay was really, really bad for a long time when they first came into the league. Seattle won 7 of the first 8 meetings between these two teams. The tables have turned most recently, though. The Buccaneers have won 4 of the last 5 meetings, including the last time these two teams played. First, Rob, we're going to go back to 2013, and this is a game that is going to pain, talking about it, it's going to pain a lot of Seahawks fans. The second one is going to be even more difficult to listen to because the Seahawks didn't win the game, but they nearly lost in 2013. To me, this is the weirdest, most inexplicable game in that Super Bowl season, maybe even the entire Pete Carroll era. There's obviously been some really bizarre games that have happened during that time period, but the Buccaneers come to CenturyLink Field. They're 0-7. Mike Glennon is their quarterback. They haven't been able to put points on the board. Their coach is getting ready to get fired. Shiano is really close to getting fired. This team is just a dumpster fire. And they come out to Seattle, and they get a 21-0 lead in the second quarter. They roll off 3 quick touchdowns. One of them was aided by a Jermaine Kearse fumble on special teams. Quickly went down and scored. Seahawks couldn't stop running back Mike James. Glennon had a couple touchdowns the first half, and it looks like the route is on with the wrong team out in front. It was just a crazy start to this football game.
Well, I think that anytime you have an inexplicable score, I think that you look at turnovers, and Seattle lost a turnover battle 3-0. And so when you have something like that, I think that's one of the reasons why you have a surprising score. And then, again, I think that this all comes down to the human emotion. I think we saw an example of that just this past week when the Seahawks, of course, rattled off the 24-0 lead over Atlanta and then looked like they basically eased off the gas pedal and kind of floated their way through the second half and made what looked like was going to be a blowout into a pretty competitive football game. You know, Pete Carroll, I think, does a terrific job of motivating his players. That particular game, from what I can remember, I just thought they looked flat. I thought they looked like 3-day-old Sprite. You know, I mean, it was just that a team that wasn't ready to play, and then in the second half woke up and wound up having one of the great comebacks in Seattle history. So I agree with you in your kind of your preface of the story, just that it was one of those stories or one of those games where that you know, Seahawks fans probably had to have some heart medication at that point, you know, pop a couple of Lipitor or something, because their blood pressure was probably through the roof. But the fact that Seattle was able to come back, was able to win the game with a clutch kick by Steve Hauschka in overtime to win it, and kind of help propel Seattle to the team of destiny that was that season, wound up winning the Super Bowl, of course. And it just, to me, it showed the resiliency rather than maybe the more negative idea of the fact that Seattle wasn't ready to play in that game.
It kind of paints the picture again, though, Rob. The Seahawks, during Pete Carroll's time here, especially when the team has been good, they have a tendency to play down to competition, and that's exactly what happened the first half. It really was the opposite of what we just saw in the Atlanta game, where it was a tale of two halves. The Seahawks did score late in the first half to make it a 14-point game, and you just had the feeling the Seahawks were going to win the game. And obviously Falcons fans probably were not feeling that way last Sunday. You know, there's no way we're coming back from this, but the Seahawks were coming in as one of the best teams in football. They were a favorite to win the Super Bowl. Eventually, they are going to win the Super Bowl. But this was not one of their more prouder moments of this season when you consider they were down 3 scores to a team that had struggled all year, couldn't win any games. They couldn't stop Mike James, 158 rushing yards in that game. This was really a wake-up call. I remember doing an article. This is when I was just starting to do sports writing just for fun. Did an article breaking down Seattle's run defense specifically from this game, and they were just getting gashed. They were missing their run assignments. Their run fits were out of whack, and the Buccaneers took advantage. The second half, they cleaned things up, though, and so they had made some major adjustments at halftime. Were able to come out, rallied, tied the game up. Russell Wilson with 2 touchdown passes. He ran for another, and then they get a couple clutch field goals from Hauschka, including that game winner in overtime, and they escape with the win. The Seahawks end up going 13-3, get home field advantage throughout the playoffs. We know the rest of the story. Crushed the Broncos in the Super Bowl to get their first Lombardi trophy. Now fast forward to 2016. This story doesn't have the same happy ending as the previous one does. And this still may be the worst offensive performance with Russell Wilson under center that we've seen. The Seahawks have had some games that have been really, really, really rough. But they lose this game 14-5. That's just a score that you don't hear happen very often. They got 3 offensive points. In this football game, and it was an atrocious showing. Russell Wilson, 17 for 33, 151 yards, no touchdowns. He threw 2 picks, and this is really the stat that stands out. Seattle was 1 for 11 on third down. When you're playing on the road, especially flying all the way down to Tampa, that's a tough road trip for a West Coast team, regardless of what the other team looks like. Came out and they were really flat the entire game, could not move the football. Jimmy Graham was really the only star on offense, 6 catches for 67 yards. Nobody else showed up. The line couldn't protect. Russell Wilson was really off. He did rush for 80 yards, so that was the only good thing he had going for him in that game, and it kept him in the game. They only gave up 14 points, but that turned out to be enough on this day because the Seahawks just could not move the football. They couldn't score points.
Yeah, I mean, while I tried to be a little bit more positive about the 2013 game and how kind of Seattle showed some resiliency in coming back, you know, Corbin, that you're absolutely right. That 2013 contest was brutal. You know, I mean, you mentioned Russell Wilson. He ran for 80 yards. I mean, other than that, Thomas Rawls, your leading rusher, he had 12 attempts for 38 yards. I mean, it was just a horrific showing from Seattle's offense, especially. I mean, the defense played pretty well. As you said, they gave up 14 points. They got a safety, you know, so the defense played pretty well. But, you know, at the same time, the offense was just miserable. You mentioned the fact 1 of 11 on third down. I mean, and just going back to Russell Wilson, I mean, when's the last time you saw Russell Wilson complete essentially 50% of his passes? That's just not the type of quarterback that he is. You know, so it just really was an ugly performance. To just kind of, again, throw some numbers out at you, we Seahawks fans know exactly who was the leading receivers during those Super Bowl era years. For Doug Baldwin to be your most productive pass catcher that day, 7 catches for 34 yards. I mean, averaging 4.9 yards a carry or a reception. Jimmy Graham. It was the leading receiver with 67 yards. But again, he's averaging 11 yards a catch. It was just a very ugly performance in all which ways for the Seahawks in that game. And it was one of the reasons why they wound up not being nearly as productive as we all thought they might be heading into that season.
That was another one of those losses that proved to be pivotal, too, because if they win that game, that's another victory that gets them closer to getting a division title and maybe even getting some home field advantage in the playoffs. And so they missed out on some opportunities that season. This is one of the biggest ones they missed out on. Jameis Winston threw for 220 yards and a couple touchdowns. He did throw an interception to Cam Chancellor. Again, when you give up 14 points, you should win the football game. That's a quality game by your defense. They gave up some yardage to Mike Evans. Winston threw the ball a little bit, but they still were able to hold them to 14 points. They got the safety. And here's a fun fact for all the Seahawks fans listening in here. The second interception that Russell Wilson threw towards the end of the game that really put the dagger in Seattle, it already looked bleak because they were down 9. They were down 2 scores no matter what. But Bradley McDougal, now one of the starting safeties for the Seahawks, his final year in Tampa Bay was the one that intercepted Russell Wilson. So the Seahawks got a little bit of a look at what he was capable of doing, and then they made sure to sign him during the offseason and bring him to Seattle on a one-year deal, then re-signed him after the 2017 season. Had a pretty big 2016 campaign for the Buccaneers, and yet they decided not to bring him back. Kind of a mysterious move considering the struggles they've had at safety ever since. But Seahawks dropped that game, still made the playoffs that year, but that was certainly a game that really hurt them once they got to the postseason. It hurt their ability to get home field advantage, potentially move up the standings. A game that came back to haunt them a little bit. Interesting I'm saying that here on Halloween. Anyway, when we come back after the break, Rob and I are going to check out what's new with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Bruce Arians, now the head coach, roaming the sidelines, a guy that's had a lot of success at CenturyLink Field, and he's bringing a roster that's got a lot of new pieces on both sides of the football and on special teams as well. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm Corbin Smith alongside my co-host Rob Rang. Seahawks gearing up for a home game against Bruce Arians and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're coming in at 2-5. It's been a struggle in Arians' first year back on the sideline as head coach. And the Buccaneers have lost several close games, but this is still a very talented team. I think a dangerous opponent coming in, especially considering Arians' ability in the past to get his Arizona Cardinals teams geared up to play in Seattle. I expect that this group that's had a lot of personnel changes, they're going to be ready to go and try to pull off an upset at CenturyLink.
No, absolutely. I agree with you, Corbin. I think this is a very talented team. People are going to look at their Tampa's record and think that this should be a blowout. But I think the Bucs are very well built to compete with Seattle. Pete Carroll noted that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers lead the league in run defense. Now, they have given up a lot of big plays on pass defense, but at the same time, they also have one of the NFL's leaders in the sack department in Shaquille Barrett, 6'2", 250-pound guy who can really get upfield. He's been a terrific player for them. They got Vita Vea back, second year, but he missed a lot of time during his rookie season. He's a big part of the reason why that they are stuffing the run so effectively. And then talking about some of the players that they've added to the roster, Big and Dominican Sue is a huge part of that. So this is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers roster. We can look at their rookies, but nobody is making more of an impact as one would expect than in Dominican Sue. People might remember that the Bucs walked into L.A. and beat the Rams with Dominican Sue being able to return a fumble for a touchdown that helped the Bucs win that game. This is a team that its two victories on the season have been on the road against quality competition, the Rams and the Carolina Panthers. So I assure you, the Seahawks are very much concerned about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
This is a team that's got an explosive passing game. Obviously, Jameis Winston still has issues with the turnover bug, low completion rate, so there's some things that have held them back, and certainly their offensive line has been having issues with letting defensive linemen and linebackers run free into the backfield. Winston's been sacked as much as any quarterback in football, second most actually behind Andy Dalton. He'll have a chance to overtake Andy Dalton now that Dalton has been benched, so maybe the Seahawks can put him into first place after this weekend, but Winston's still the starter, but otherwise, they've had tons of changes on this roster. Dirk Cotter's out. They replaced him with Arians. Comes out of his semi-retirement, so to speak. Ryan Fitzpatrick is gone. DeSean Jackson gone. Adam Humphrey's gone. Defensively, no more Gerald McCoy. Vinnie Curry's gone. Quan Alexander goes to the 49ers. Brent Grimes is gone. And then safety Andrew Adams as well. They brought in a lot of new players because they were going to a new scheme led by Todd Bowles, former Jets head coach, also was defensive coordinator for the Cardinals under Arians for a few years, a guy that's had some success against Russell Wilson over the years, a defense that's going to blitz a lot, going to be very aggressive. So they've added some pieces. Shaq Barrett, you mentioned, 10 sacks in 7 games, a breakout season for him. He has really thrived in Todd Bowles' system. And then they've got a rookie that I know you absolutely love. Love their first round pick out of LSU, Devin White.
Yeah, he's the Buckus Award winner from a year ago, and for good reason. I mean, this is a kid who's really, really instinctive, and he's also incredibly fast. 4.4, kind of a guy at 245 pounds. I mean, he is just the classic middle linebacker. He's a lot like number 54 for the Seahawks, Bobby Wagner, the team's franchise's all-time leading tackler. That's the type of player that I think Devin White is going to prove to be for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mentioned the big guys inside, and Sue and Vita Vea. And so anytime you have defensive tackles of that size and you have an inside linebacker who can fly the football the way Devin White can, that's going to lead to a team that is going to be very, very productive in stopping, opposing running attacks. So we all know that, in some of the games that we just described between Seattle and Tampa Bay, when Seattle has not been able to run the football, there's a lot of Seahawks fans out there who just say that, hey, Russell Wilson is spectacular in that regard. Well, part of the reason why Russell Wilson is so good is because he has had a quality running attack to complement him. So this might be a game where all those people who want to say, hey, just put the Seahawks on Russell Wilson's shoulders and let's see, he may very well have to do that in this game because, again, I think Tampa Bay is kind of uniquely positioned to be able to slow down Seattle's running attack. Now it's going to be incumbent on Wilson and Seattle's pass catchers to be able to take advantage of a Buccaneers roster, or at least their secondary, that has been prone to giving up the big play.
They've given up a ton of explosive 20, 40-yard pass plays. Run game, that's been the opposite. They have only given up one run of 20 yards or more this year. That's the lowest total in the NFL. So this is a really hard team to run the football on. And I think that we'd be remiss not to mention that alongside Devin White, they've got Lavonte David, who I believe is having one of the best seasons of his career. He has really blossomed, kind of rebounded a bit in Todd Bowles' defense. So that front seven is loaded with talent. There's a reason they've been able to slow down the run. The problem is those front seven guys, unless they're getting pressure on quarterbacks, they can't make up for the fact the secondary is littered with more holes than Swiss cheese. So that's where the Seahawks will be looking to take advantage of them. We'll talk more about individual matchups on tomorrow's show, but certainly that's an area the Seahawks have to be licking their chops about a little bit. They just got to be able to give Russell Wilson enough time to throw, which against a defense coordinated by Todd Bowles, maybe easier said than done. Looking at the rest of their rookie class, this is actually a draft class I really like. They've got a lot of players that I was very high on going into the pre-draft process. Devin White, I expect it would be a top 10 pick, just as he was, an excellent selection for them. Sean Murphy Bunting, a corner out of Central Michigan, I had a third to early fourth round grade on him. They picked him in the second, and he's played in six games. Quite a few snaps, actually, for them. That secondary's had so many issues that it's understandable why a rookie's going to get in there. Mike Edwards, a safety out of Kentucky, he has started four games for him. He's made some plays back there, a couple pass deflections, forced a fumble. And then they got Anthony Nelson, a big defensive end out of Iowa that I really liked. They got him in the fourth round. He's played in a lot of games, not a ton of snaps. But certainly they've got a well-rounded draft class here for Bruce Arians and his staff to build around.
Yeah, they do. I mean, this is one of my favorite draft classes in all the NFL this past year. And a lot of the same players that you just mentioned that you like, Corbin. I mean, you know, you're a film guru yourself. And so these players are guys that you just put on the tape and you can see why the general manager, Jason Light, there, liked the players that he brought in. And I think that they, in many cases, are terrific fits in Todd Bowles and, Todd Bowles' defense specifically. And so I was happy that you mentioned Bowles because he does a terrific job with just how creative his blitzes, how aggressive they are. And so you look at some of these, the corners, and whether it be Bunting, whether it be Jamel Dean, they are physical guys. They're good tacklers. They're just young. And so they're going to have some struggles, but they also are really good football players. You mentioned Nelson from Iowa. I mean, he's kind of jumped off tape. I remember talking to Jim Nagy, the Senior Bowl executive down in Mobile, Alabama, and how excited Nagy was that he was able to get Nelson to play in his game because he was a graduate player, but only athletically considered a junior, but he was graduating. And so he was able to get Nelson to play in this game and just a terrific football player that he is as well, a guy who I expect to have a long-time NFL career. Terry Beckner, even a seventh-round pick, is a guy that I believe is going to be a good player for a long time. And then Matt Gay, the kicker, has wound up being a good kicker for them. So, I mean, this is a quality team with a lot of notable additions and perhaps more than any other team that we've seen so far this year, it's been a big part of it has been their rookie class. And that's not necessarily something that you might expect for a team with a coach as old as Bruce Arians, but he is one of those guys that is almost like Pete Carroll, and that age is just a number. You know, he plays, he coaches with enthusiasm, and so his players play with enthusiasm for him.
Yeah, this is the team out of our game so far. This is going to be the ninth game of the year. This has to be the biggest list as far as rookie contributors for any team. And you can maybe expect that with a team that's struggling. They're trying to cycle through a new group of players. They're going to go through their lumps because of that. And there's one other guy I want to mention here. They've got a receiver from Bowling Green. And I remember watching him against Oregon last year. Scott Miller's his name. Scott Miller put up huge numbers that game. Bowling Green got smashed. They didn't have the talent anywhere else. But this kid was consistently giving Oregon issues. He actually won some matchups against Ugo Amadi, the Seahawks' fourth-round pick out of Oregon, in that game. And so I actually highlighted that on Amadi's breakdown, looking at college film after Seattle drafted him. I said he did have some issues out of the slot working against Scott Miller, who burned him a few times. So this is a guy that has had kind of a slow start to his rookie season, but he's another player that I think they're excited about his potential in their offense, especially after losing Humphreys in free agency. Maybe Scott Miller can become that guy that they can plug in there in the slot, along with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans on the outside. They're a team that's got some dynamic weapons on the outside. When Jameis Winston is on, this is an offense that can be really tough to slow down. They could use a little help in the run department, but as far as their passing game goes, it can be really potent. So we'll have a chance tomorrow to break down more of these matchups and look at some keys of the game. Certainly plenty of talent on both sides of the ball for the Buccaneers coming to Seattle. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor on the Locked On Seahawks podcast, you can contact me, LockSeahawks@gmail.com. Make sure to subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is. Go to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up, it's officially going to be Blue Friday. We will be breaking down five key matchups to watch in this football game. And as always, Rob and I will devise a game plan for Seahawks victory. Hope you'll be listening in. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks.